But now on BBC Radio 4, our Saturday drama, Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance by Robert M. Persig. Dramatised for radio by Peter Flannery.
How silent it all is. It's like I'm watching a movie where the sound has failed. I, Phaedrus, am behind a glass door. On the other side of it stands Chris. He's 8 years old. And then I see what the glass door is. I'm in an enormous vault. I'm dead. Chris motions for me to open the glass door. He wants to talk to me, ask me what death is like, maybe. I want to tell him it's not so bad. It's just lonely. I reach to push the door open, but a dark figure won't allow it. The dead aren't permitted to speak to the living.
Dad? Dad? I want you to wake up.
Chris! I will see you!
Dad, wake up, will you? You're frightening me.
I'll see you at the bottom of the ocean!
You're not permitted to talk to Chris. You're dead.
Dad?
No! Hi, where are we?
Who are you talking to?
What? Oh, nobody, no. It was just a dream.
Your voice was different.
It was just a dream, Chris. What time is it?
It's 6 in the morning, and we're in a swamp somewhere. You wanted us to sleep out in the open last night. You said it would be fun.
We're in Dakota, Chris.
I'm cold. Why couldn't we stay in the motel with the others?
You wanted a camp, Chris. It was your idea, remember?
My stomach hurts. I hate this.
I'm sorry your stomach hurts. But in a couple of weeks, we'll be in California, looking at the ocean. Think of that.
And then what? You meet me there, at the ocean?
How could I meet you? I don't know what you're talking about, son. I don't know why you say these things. Just think about arriving at the Pacific. You've never seen it before.
And then what?
Well, then the trip will be over, I guess.
Then what?
I don't know, Chris. Let's back up the gear. We'll go into town. Find John, Sylvia, have breakfast, huh?
They're your friends, not mine.
Hey, come on, give me your sleeping bag.
I don't want to pack up our things.
Then you don't get breakfast.
I don't want breakfast. My stomach hurts.
Okay.
I can see by my watch, without taking my hand from the grip of the cycle, that it's 7:30 now. The wind, even at 60 miles an hour, is warm and humid. So I'm wondering what it's going to be like by the afternoon. We're heading northwest out of the Dakotas. I'm happy to be riding back through this country. It's a kind of nowhere. Famous for nothing at all. That's its appeal for me. Gradually, the sun warms us up, and my feelings warm up with it. The tired, sleepless feeling wears off completely, and the wind and the sun feel good now, making it real. It's happening. Just from the warming of the sun, the road, the green farmland, and the buffeting wind coming together. And soon it is nothing but beautiful warmth and wind and speed and sun down the smooth, empty road.
Chris, you see him? You see the ducks?
All I can see is the back of your head.
Sorry.
Hey, how are the mosquitoes?
Hungry. What's good?
Ham and eggs. Waffle. Coffee.
Hi there. Get you something?
Yeah. Coffee, waffles, syrup, sausages.
More coffee?
Sure.
Coming up.
Where's Chris?
He's not hungry. He's in the parking lot with a bike.
Well, I guess he can eat later.
No. He knows the rules.
You think maybe you're a little hard on him?
Sylvia.
It's just, there's a pattern. He's really not enjoying his vacation, is he? Is it us?
No.
Coffee.
Good coffee. You were right.
So, what is it then?
Not our business, Sylvia.
Yes, it is our business, John. Because you know what? This is our vacation, too.
Okay. Chris has been in a lot of trouble at school. And at home with his mother and his brother, his behavior is aggressive and erratic. Stomach pains, the endless attention-seeking, etc., etc. The fact is, they think these things may be the first signs of a mental illness. So,
what do you think it is?
Maybe they're right.
Waffles and sausages.
Yeah, right here. Hey, Chris, you ready to roll?
Yeah, sure.
How was the great outdoors, Chris?
Fine, I guess. Hey, Sylvia.
Hey. I brought you some hotcakes.
He eats with us or not at all?
Oh. I'm not hungry, thanks.
Sylvia, get on the bike.
Is there something wrong?
This is a BMW R60 with 3,000 miles on her. Believe me, there is nothing wrong.
You're flooding the engine, John. Smells like a refinery around here.
I smell it. Jesus H. Christ!
Hey, cool it.
Cool it? What the hell's the matter with this thing?
Well, maybe you should take out the plugs and dry them off while we all get another coffee. Chris could have some eggs.
I don't want more coffee. I just want to be on the road. And I don't want all that stuff.
Oh, what stuff?
Having to get the tools out and the instructions. Why doesn't this damn thing start? It's a brand new machine and it... Okay. Okay. I'm following the instructions to the letter. See? It's on full choke.
Full choke. That's for when it's cold. It's been sitting in the sun for hours.
Yeah, why the hell didn't they tell you that in the instruction book? Okay. I'm now opening the choke. Right. Okay. Thank you. Let's roll.
See you down the road.
Come on, Chris. Ready?
Yeah.
A long way to California, and to be honest, I no longer believe we'll both make it all the way. I have my good reasons for making this trip, but Chris has none, really. I realize that now. He just feels he's being punished for something he can't help. I'll give him the choice to turn back at Montana. I'll go on to the ocean alone. Meantime, I'd like to talk about some things that seem important right now. It's a trail of thoughts, ideas that start in the shallow pool of John and his motorcycle and end up in the deep ocean of what is best in the world and how does a person live a life that is at one with the universe. I know I could preach the value of motorcycle maintenance to John for all eternity and his eyes would just continue to glaze right over. It's garbage, he says. Just hates technology. Of course he does. He plays drums for a living. To a jazz drummer. Why do you call it all that stuff? Motorcycle maintenance, leaking faucets, faulty light switches, nuclear power plants. It's just the least cool thing imaginable. Why does John and half the world along with him feel this way? Because to me, motorcycle maintenance is full of beauty and meaning. Then I would say that, wouldn't I? These days, I write technical manuals for a living. Yeah, I'm the guy who wrote the manual telling you how to assemble that new gas barbecue you bought. Already half of you would like to lay me across it and burn me to death.
What are you laughing at?
What?
What are you laughing at?
Death!
What?
That's it. Of course, that's how half the world experiences technology, as a death force. Blind, inhuman, mechanical, lifeless. It's me, John and Sylvia, strangers in their own world.
Dad, we need to pull over.
For me, the Buddha, Godhead, exists just as happily in the circuits of a digital computer or in a cycle transmission as in the petals of a flower or at the top of a mountain. could it be otherwise?
Dad!
What?
Pull over! John wants us to stop.
We missed the turning about 5 miles back. Didn't you hear me honking at you?
I didn't see any sign.
It was as big as a barn door. I thought the whole point was to stay off the interstates. Keep to the old two-laners. See America? Not be part of this funeral procession of cars?
I'm sorry. I don't know why I missed it. You want to go back?
No, I guess we may as well just keep going. We'll get there anyway.
Getting there anyway wasn't the point, John.
Come on, let's go. There's a storm coming. I can see the edge.
Let's put the ponchos on.
Dad?
Yeah?
Well, what do you think about all the time?
I think about what the hell went wrong with the 20th century. You ready?
We're off the interstate, alas, and onto the old roads that only connect the little places that are no longer important to big-time America. This isn't the road we planned to take. We missed that road. In fact, it isn't a road I've ever taken before. And yet it feels familiar.
Whoa! See the lightning?
It gives me a peculiar feeling. Apprehension. About what? As if we were being watched, as if we were being followed. But there isn't a car anywhere, and only John and Sylvia way up ahead. It's getting darker and darker. Here comes the rain. Hits you like needles at this speed. That farmhouse. Yes, then a windmill. Yes, oh my God.
Oh my God.
What?
Phaedrus has been here. This is his road, a fence, and then some trees, and then a house, and then a water tower. Yes, exactly right. He's been here.
I'll see you there, at the bottom of the ocean.
That's why the roads seem familiar. That's why I feel followed. Phaedrus has been down this road.
We need to find shelter. We figured on that motel up ahead.
Well, there's a better one. Turn right at a row of cottonwoods, about a mile.
Enough to eat, Chris?
Yeah, thanks.
That was some storm. Pass the whiskey.
You were right about this place. How did you know about it?
Intuition, I guess.
You okay? You look pale. You look like you've seen a ghost.
No, no, Sylvia. Ghosts are unscientific.
Do you believe in ghosts, Dad?
No.
Well, then, who's Phaedrus?
What?
Who's Phaedrus? You said he'd been here, in the storm. You said this is his road, and Phaedrus has been here.
Well, the only Phaedrus I know was a Greek philosopher who died 3,000 years ago.
So how could he have been down this road?
Yeah, good point, Chris.
John, put the bottle down. It's bedtime. Good night, everybody.
Whoa, is that the time?
No.
Good night, everybody.
They think I'm weird, don't they? Crazy Chris.
It's late.
Why do you never answer any of my questions?
We have a long day ahead of us. Go brush your teeth.
Except for the wind through the screens, the motel is quiet. The thought of all that wind sweeping toward us across the open prairies, it's like a lullaby to me, and I feel sleep coming.
Dad? You saw Phaedrus, didn't you? In the storm. He was the ghost Sylvie thought you'd seen, right?
I'm trying to sleep, Chris.
I only want to know. It doesn't matter. Just tell me.
Well, since it doesn't matter, no. I didn't see him.
But he's been on this road.
Yeah.
better be the last one, Chris, or I'm gonna get angry.
I was just gonna say, you sure don't talk like anybody else.
Yeah, Chris, I know that. It's a problem. I'll go to sleep.
Good night, Dad.
Good night.
Chris has cried himself asleep at last, and I am wide awake, watching shimmering flecks of moonlight and listening to the wind. There is no question now. Phaedrus saw and heard all of this. Why he came this way, I may never know, but he did. And today, he steered me onto this strange road. He's been with me all along, all the way from Minnesota. And now I understand. There will be no escape. Everything I've said, all the ideas about technology and the Buddha and motorcycles, it's all him. I haven't had a new idea in years. They are stolen from Phaedrus. And that is why he is here. No, that is not why he is here. Evil spirit, insane, from a world without life or death. He has come to take Chris. Though it's only 9:30, it's in the 80s already. Hot. But there is no traffic on this road, so we're moving right along. It's a traveling day. And I'd like to use it to tell you about Phaedrus. Nobody believed his ideas. Nobody understood him. In time, he was forgotten. I prefer him to stay forgotten, but I have no choice. My purpose is not to praise Phaedrus. My purpose is to bury him. Properly and forever this time. He began his journey into madness by dividing human understanding into two kinds. Romantic understanding and classical understanding. Romantic understanding is inspirational, imaginative, creative, intuitive. Classical understanding proceeds by reasons and laws. Although motorcycle riding is romantic, motorcycle maintenance is purely classical.
What happened?
Cross the line into Montana. Didn't you see the sign?
All I can see is the back of your head.
Sorry.
Sylvia's waving her arms up and down. But my feelings are not jubilant at all. This is where Phaedrus lived. I have a fragment of a memory of him that came back to me last night in the motel. He had been up in the mountains for 3 days without food. Just thinking. In the dusk, he saw an animal coming down the trail towards him. He stared into its eyes for a long time, sensing some kind of recognition in what he saw there. Only later did he realize that it was a timber wolf, and he came to see that wolf as an image of himself. The cold-eyed, fanatical hunter. Except that his prey wasn't food. It was the ghost of rationality. That Western way of thinking that he believed had divided us into inside and outside, romantic and classical, here and there, then and now, you and me. How do I know all this stuff about Phaedrus? I first met him on a Friday, many years ago. I had gone to work, got a lot done, went to a party where, after talking to everybody too long and too loudly and drinking way too much, I went into a back room to lie down for a while. When I woke, it was daylight, and I'd slept right through the night, which is embarrassing because I didn't even know the names of the hosts. The room looked different, but it had been dark, and anyway, I was blind drunk when I lay down. Then I saw that these were not the clothes I had been wearing. I opened the door, but to my surprise, the doorway led not to the rooms of a house, but into a long corridor.
Hi. Can you help me, please? Hey. Hi there. Did you just come out of...
Yeah, I was, I was asleep through there. I'm looking for the way out.
Uh-huh. How are you feeling? Martha, could you?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, could you?
Sure.
How are you feeling?
Okay. No hangover.
Yeah?
It's okay. Hi.
He just woke up, he says.
Yeah, hi. I'm looking for the way out. I need to go home.
Sure. You'll be going home any day now.
Isn't it very early for this to be happening?
It's incredible.
Have I been ill? Is this a hospital?
Sit down with me for a second. There's something you need to understand. Tell me what you remember, would you?
I woke up in a room over there.
Before that?
I was at a party, I think.
And before that?
Before that, I don't remember anything before that.
That's good.
What is good? Is this a dream? I know. I want to wake up from this.
Here we go.
What is this?
Just something to calm you. Take his arm.
Whoa, what is this a dream?
No, this isn't the dream. What you have to understand is that everything before you woke up a few minutes ago, that was the dream.
Huh?
Okay? You'll be asleep again soon. It'll take a while to get used to.
Get used to what?
You're a new person now. You have a new personality now.
Later, I was handed a piece of paper telling me that some man whose name meant nothing to me had been committed as insane. That was my first inkling of the existence of the man I now call Phaedrus. And he was dead. Destroyed by order of the court, enforced by the transmission of high-voltage alternating current through the lobes of his brain in a technological process known as Annihilation ECS. I have never met him, and I never will. But he once owned these hands. He once saw the world through these eyes. The road winds upwards and the air starts to cool. The sun angles toward the cloud and a blissful cold wind comes down with pine smells from the trees. We reach the top of the climb and there are John and Sylvia waiting for us. And we look down on the huge river valley below.
Hey, you finally arrived, Slowpoke. The top of the mountain.
See that, Chris?
Wow.
Yeah. Top of the mountain.
Can I have more?
You don't need what you got.
No, but I'm going to.
He's a growing boy.
So, can I have more?
Sure.
So what did you do this morning?
Well, we're 2,500 feet now. We'll be going a lot higher. That makes the engines run, Reg, so I decided to change the standard jets.
Do you have any idea what he's talking about?
None at all.
I think of it as a kind of holy ceremony. The tools are religious icons, and I'm performing holy rites with them. Right on the edge of the classic romantic barrier where there are two motorcycles, one which is as it appears on the surface to the rider, and the other one only the mechanic sees, which is its underlying form. So today I changed the underlying form of my motorcycle.
And that took you all morning. Right.
So what did you do?
I just took a stroll. This is a really great town. Stockman's bars, high top boots, silver dollar belt buckles, Levi's, Stetsons, the whole thing. But it's real. It's not Chambers of Commerce stuff. So I go into a bar down the block, and it's like they've known me my whole life. They're talking about Bozeman. That's where you're taking us, right?
Yeah.
What's in Bozeman?
I have some friends there. We'll be staying with them.
What friends?
Just old friends I used to work with.
We used to live there when I was little.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So why are we going there now?
Just to say hello.
I don't want to say hello.
It'll be fun, Chris. It's always fun to see places you grew up in.
I don't want to. My stomach hurts.
Do you need the bathroom?
Yeah.
I should check on Chris.
John, I have a suggestion. We go as far as Bozeman as planned. Then what do you say you and I leave them to it at that point? Head somewhere else. I don't want to ride all the way to the coast with them. This is just not fun.
Okay. That's cool with me. This was a mistake. I'm sorry.
Chris is outside. Take your time. No hurry.
Listen, buddy. Those local guys told me another route to Bozeman, south through Yellowstone Park.
South? Wait, you mean Red Lodge?
Yep.
Is that bad?
No. No, it'll just take us way above the timberline.
Yeah, it'll be cold, but it's more direct. Means we could be in Bozeman tomorrow night.
Well, sure, but it means we won't,
John and I have decided to turn back after we visit with your friends in Bozeman.
Turn back?
Yeah.
Oh. Oh, okay. Yeah, sure. Actually, it'll be just tremendous up there. This is a good choice. I'll tell Chris we need to wear all the heavy clothing we've got.
We're above the timberline now, between steep banks of snow where the plows have been through. 4 feet high, then 6 feet, then 12, almost a tunnel of snow. Above us and beyond us are further mountain ranges of snow. We are in the high country. Chris is silent behind me. I told him the Sutherlands were turning back at Bozeman. I didn't think he'd care, but he did. Because, of course, he takes everything as a personal criticism now. Maybe this is a trip I should have made alone. Like Phaedrus always did. He traveled alone in the high country of the mind. He just didn't see the dangers of asking those big questions. What is the purpose of all this? What is the truth? And how do you know it when you have it? How do we really know anything? He traveled on, ever upwards and upwards, and alone, always alone.
Do you want to be alone?
No. Please, please join me.
You're angry with us?
No, I'm not.
Disappointed?
Well, maybe. I enjoy having you along, but I understand.
These people we'll meet tomorrow.
The Deweeses, yeah.
Is he an engineer, too?
No, he's an abstract artist. Paints and sculpts.
Huh? You're kidding me. I guess there's a lot we don't know about you.
He was teaching fine arts at the college in Bozeman when I met him.
But you weren't teaching in the arts faculty, surely?
Actually, I was. I taught rhetoric in the English department.
You taught rhetoric? How's an engineer get to teach rhetoric?
Well, actually, I wasn't an engineer. I started in what's now called molecular biology, except that I flunked my grades and left without my degree.
How come?
Rationality was a problem for me. Logic just divides the world into subjects and objects and takes no note of who's doing the dividing. All it does is classify. It never reveals meaning.
So, what'd you do about that, that absence of meaning?
Oh, well, I went to India. I spent 10 years studying Oriental philosophy in Benares. I
I wanted to destroy logic, destroy the illusion of the separation of subject and object. There are many disciplines for this. One of the best is the Sanskrit Dhyana. In China, it's called Chan. In Japan, that's mispronounced as Zen.
Huh. And Zen was the answer.
No. I thought it might be, but one day in the classroom, the professor of philosophy was blithely expounding for the 50th time about the illusory nature of the world, and I asked him a question that had been bugging me.
What question?
I asked him if it was believed that the bombs that destroyed Hiroshima and Nagasaki were illusory. He smiled and said, yes. A perfectly good reply within the confines of Indian philosophy, but for Phaedrus, completely unsatisfactory. Hopeless, in fact.
Phaedrus?
Phaedrus is, it's just a name I call myself at the time.
Okay. So, how did Phaedrus solve this problem?
By giving up. He left the classroom, he left India, and he gave up asking questions. He came back to the Midwest, took a practical degree in journalism, got married, lived in Nevada, Mexico, got work as a science writer, fathered two children, bought two cars and a house, and started putting on middle-age weight. No more chasing ghosts.
Well, I guess that's what we all do as we get older. I guess it's time to sleep. Looking forward to meeting your friends tomorrow. Good night.
Good night.
How could I tell her that I'm dreading it? I have no real idea how well Deweese knew Phaedrus, or what memories he'll expect me to share. Almost all of that life was wiped out by the bolts of electricity.
This is just so beautiful. Gosh, it must be so amazing just to live in a place like this.
Oh, it is. It really is.
Look, we got cold, huh? Done,
you know. Man, oh, fantastic. I love this. And here, help yourself to beers. Come on, guys. And Chris, I got you a lemonade. And can I get a hug, please?
Yeah. Oh.
There you go.
Look how tall he's gotten.
I grew 3 inches already this year.
Oh. He's a monster.
The feeling of the tune comes on. They think the person they knew back then is here now.
Did he ever give us the merest hint how beautiful this place was? Did our friend here, Mr. Technoman, ever suggest that this would be anything but the end of the world?
Hey, why didn't you tell us? Dad?
Dad, John asked you something.
You'd have to be crazy to leave this place.
Yeah, why did you leave?
Dad.
He saw too much.
What?
Dad, are you okay?
You don't say things like that. They let you leave the hospital on the understanding that you don't say things like that.
Chris, would you like to see your room?
Yes, please.
Well, you were right about the cold. Where did the sun go all of a sudden?
Wind sweeps down the canyon from way up high. You used to spend a lot of time up there.
All his time. He used to spend all his time up there, remember?
I don't remember a lot.
Well, you talked a lot about it last night.
When?
Just before you went to sleep in the cabin.
You were dreaming, Chris. You were asleep long before I was.
You woke me up. You wanted to talk. You said it was lonely here.
Why would I say that?
Well, I don't know, do I? How do I know why you say things?
Come on, Chris. I'll show you the room. John? Sylvia, would you like to see yours?
Sure.
You've changed a lot.
Uh-huh.
I guess we all have. Your friends are turning back tomorrow. What are you and Chris intending to do?
I think Chris and I should do some climbing. Up to where that wind starts. I think it's time he got a different look at the world.
Okay, you have a good ride home.
We will. Hey, thanks for having us along.
Yeah, it's been great. Bye, Chris.
Yeah, bye. See you back in Minnesota. Yeah. Hey, do I get a hug?
Sure.
Hey, don't worry about anything. It'll all be okay. I promise.
Okay, here we go.
Let's walk a while. You remember when we lived here in Bozeman?
Well, a little, I guess.
You remember the street?
Yeah. We used to ride into the car to look for you. Whoever saw you first would get a nickel. And then we'd stop and let you in the back, and you wouldn't even talk to us.
Remember that building over there?
It's where you used to teach. Why are we going there?
I don't know. But I just wanted to see it. Come on.
I don't like it here.
Wait outside then.
You come too.
Later.
No, now!
I said later.
On one of the classroom doorknobs, I see his hand come to rest. Then slowly turn the knob. Then push open the door. The room has been waiting. His classroom. He's here now. He's aware of everything I see. His last happy days were in this room. No 2 hours were ever like.
Can I help you? This isn't a public... Oh, my God, it's you!
Yeah, it's me.
You've come back!
I have no memory of her, of course. But I guess he has.
I still work here, obviously. Oh, I try to think the way you talked. With quality, I mean... You coming back to the college?
No, I'm just passing through. Thought I'd see how the place looked.
Oh, it's changed. We've all changed so much since you left. We were told you were in a hospital.
Yeah.
So, hey, where are you teaching?
Oh, I'm not teaching anymore. I stopped.
You stopped? You can't do that. Not you.
No, I had to.
That's just crazy. Sorry. I didn't mean to. I better go.
Suddenly an avalanche of memory. Her name was Sarah. She started it all. The whole madness in this very room, on this exact spot. Quality. For the first year of his teaching career, Phaedrus had accepted the old framework that there were rational rules that you learned and they made you able to write well. In his heart, he knew this was wrong. Then, one day, he was standing on this very spot, looking out at the mountain and trying to figure out why the class he just taught had been so depressing. Correct spelling, correct grammar, correct punctuation, and no meaning. No enjoyment. And then a door opened.
Oh, hey there. Would I interrupt your thinking if I just tiptoed past and ordered your plants here?
No, come right in, Sarah.
My. You do seem gloomy today. Class not go well?
I don't really know what it is I'm teaching, Sarah.
Well, I hope you're teaching them quality. Hardly anybody is these days.
Quality? Of course I'm teaching them quality. Who isn't teaching quality? I don't know what you mean by that.
I didn't mean anything. Have a nice weekend.
Quality. There was something made him angry about her question. He thought about it. Then he looked out of the window at the mountain. Then he thought some more. 4 hours later, he was staring at the dark sky. The phone rang. It was his wife, to ask what was happening. He told her he'd be home soon. Then he forgot he'd spoken to her. He forgot everything. At 3 o'clock the following morning, he finally confessed to himself that he didn't have a clue what quality was or how to teach it. He picked up his briefcase and walked home through the deserted streets. If you don't know what quality is, how do you even know it exists? Yet we all know it exists, and we all know instinctively what it is. What else are school grades based on? Why do we pay good money for some things and throw others in the trash? Some things are better than others. So round and round he started to go. What the hell was quality?
I knew what it was. I figured it out.
Just what exactly was it? I only have fragments now, only shards of memory of what he discovered.
I had an explanation of existence, an understanding of human consciousness better than any that had existed before.
You were insane. You brought total disaster on yourself and everybody who knew you. Before the electrodes were attached to your head, you'd lost everything tangible. Money, property, children, all your rights as a citizen, all taken away by order of the court. All that was left was your crazy lone dream of quality. A map of a route across the mountain. A journey to inner truth for which you sacrificed everything. And after the electrodes were attached, you lost even that. You were insane, and now you don't exist anymore. You no longer exist. Remember that.
It's cold in here. Cold and lonely.
Wow. See it, Dad? What was it?
A partridge.
How do you know everything?
They rock back and forth like that when they fly, I think.
Look at the sun coming through the trees.
Like a cathedral.
Yeah. How far to the top of the mountain?
It's a long, long way. But we'll get there.
It's nice to begin journeys cheerfully, even when you know they won't end that way. So it was with Phaedrus when he set out to define and teach quality. Although I don't recall his students feeling too happy about his methods at first.
It's outrageous! You can't treat us this way!
How are we supposed to know if we passed or failed?
Whoa. Calm down. Hey, one at a time.
No.
Now, what is the problem exactly?
You know what the problem is.
Yeah. Where are our grades?
One at a time. You.
You gave us our assignments back, but you didn't give us our grades.
Yeah. Quiet, will you, please? Quiet, that's right. No more grades.
Then how do we know if we wrote good or bad?
Exactly.
Well, ignoring the bad grammar of that sentence, I'd say it's better if you decide what's good and bad.
As we get further up the mountain, the trail starts to disappear. And so do Chris's good spirits. Matt can't afford to let him start misbehaving. This country can be dangerous when you're this high up. You take one bad step in a million, break your ankle, and then you find out how far away you are from civilization.
Chris! Chris, slow down!
I don't need to slow down. You need to go faster.
Yes? You wanted to see me, Dean?
Yes. Sit down a minute, would you? Okay. This sinister, manipulative experiment you've been conducting. I've letters of complaint from students and parents. Tell me what it is you're hoping to achieve by withholding grades.
Well, I want the students to become creative instead of merely imitative. I want them to decide for themselves what's good and bad.
I see. If they already know what's good writing and what isn't, why did they enroll on this course, would you say?
Because they don't realize they already know. Because the university tells them they don't know, because the university thinks it exists to tell people they don't know things. It can then sell them what's known as an education.
Well, one female student has had a nervous breakdown. So I suggest you go back to doing the job we pay you to do.
The dean had a point. Phaedrus had created a Kafkaesque situation for his students in which they felt punished for failing to do something they didn't know they weren't doing. So he gave them something to do. A new assignment entitled, What is Quality in Thought and Statement? It almost caused a riot.
I sat there all night long.
I was waiting to go. Whoa, one at a time.
Why are you doing this to us?
Doing what?
Asking us questions we cannot possibly know the answers to.
I am doing it because I don't know the answers to these questions.
What?
And I thought you might help me find them.
Really?
That doesn't make any sense.
Are you serious?
What do you mean you don't know?
I mean, I don't know.
What do you think?
Yeah.
Okay, I think there is such a thing as quality. But that, as soon as you try to define it, something goes haywire and you can't do it. So let us forget about defining it, shall we? Let us focus on recognizing it. No, this we can do, I believe, by a non-rational process only, because you may not be able to define it, but you know what it is. Hey, I appended two examples of English composition to each of your essay papers. Number one and number two. Did you read them?
Yes.
All right, glance at them again now to remind yourselves. Okay. Hands up. Who thought number one was better? Don't think about it. Don't look at your friends. Just do it. Now, 28 of you, and only two thought otherwise. Who just changed their minds? Oh, you see, you do know.
So we guessed right?
You weren't guessing. You saw the quality.
Yeah, but did I pass? Did I pass the assignment?
Yeah.
Yes. You passed your assignment. No, hey, you all passed your assignment. Now, read number one again. Pick up your pens, write me 500 words about what makes it good.
Within a week, students were stopping by his office just to tell him that English, which they used to hate, was now their favorite subject. But Phaedrus knew he'd achieved this through sleight of hand. In the Church of Reason, you cannot base your thoughts on a refusal to define your meaning. The ghost of rationality still haunted the house. He had merely closed his eyes to it. Up ahead, Chris looks tired and angry. It won't be long now. Whoop. There he goes. It was an awfully neat little fall. And now he's waiting for me to catch up so that I can condemn his failure.
Hard going, huh? What do you say we pick a spot and make camp for the night?
I don't want to camp.
Well, we can go back if that's what you want to do.
I don't care. I don't want to.
Don't want to what?
I don't want to do anything. I don't care.
Well, since you don't care, let's go on, shall we?
I don't like this trip. It isn't any fun being with you.
That may be true, Chris, but it's a hell of a thing to say.
I'm gonna get to the top and I don't care what you do.
No quality. I guess that's the message Chris wants to give me. Our relationship has no quality.
Okay, but, like, if you can't define something, it doesn't exist.
Well, of course it does.
Oh, but then what is it?
Well, it doesn't matter what it is. You know what it is. We all know what it is. Okay, listen to this. A thing exists if a world without it cannot function normally.
What in the hell does that mean?
It's from an ancient Greek school of philosophy called realism. And it's a very good point. Describe a world without quality in it. What do we lose? What disappears?
Yeah, why hang a painting on the wall if the bare wall is just as good?
Right.
Music. Yeah, why make music when scratching your fingernail across a chalkboard sounds just as good?
Football.
Baseball.
All sport disappears. The scores would no longer measure what was better.
Movies.
Dances.
Plays.
Parties.
We don't use the bus. We all wear the same clothes.
And we eat the same food.
No technology.
No.
Why bother making things?
And what remains untouched? Reason, intellect, pure science, math.
But how is that? I mean, why would that be?
Life would go on without quality. But it would be just living. We could say it might not be worth living because the term worth describes quality. Life without quality has no value and no purpose.
Sir, are you okay?
Jesus Christ, Jesus. No value and no purpose. No meaning. Oh, that's it. God, that is it!
What's it? So is class over?
I put the point of my knife directly onto the term quality and I tapped it gently. The whole world split in two. Classic and romantic, hip and square, technological and humanistic. A tiny fault line in our concept of the universe. Quality. Open the door.
Dad, I want you to wake up.
Open the door, Chris. Chris, if you open the door, I can come out.
Dad. Wake up. I want you to wake up.
Huh? What? Is that rain? How long's it been raining?
I don't know. I just woke up. You were talking to me again. You asked me to open the door and you could be with me. Then you said you'd see me at the top of the mountain.
Go back to sleep. Hey, when I talk in my sleep, what does my voice sound like?
Like you're drunk or something. Like you were somebody else. Like you used to sound a long time ago.
So I sound different. I didn't know that. His ideas now fill my head all the waking day. My nights are haunted by his desire to return to life. He's getting stronger and stronger. This was supposed to be impossible. If he still exists, then who am I?
How will we know when we're near the top?
Look for blue sky. Between the trees. His mood seems much better than yesterday. Despite the scary stuff of the night talking. Maybe it's the mountain. This forest silence improves most people. For Phaedrus, who was soon fired from his teaching job, the world was no longer two things, mind and matter. It was three things, mind, matter, and quality. Subject, object, and quality. Being unemployed gave him a lot more time to think. If quality is neither subject nor object, then what is it? And one day, it began to dawn on him. Quality is not a thing. It is an event. Warm. It is the event at which the subject becomes aware of the object. Warmer. And because without objects there can be no subject, because the objects create the subject's awareness of himself, quality is therefore the event at which awareness of both subjects and objects is made possible. He brought out his knife again,
A sun of quality, he wrote, does not revolve around the subjects and objects of existence. It has created them.
Blue sky. Race it to the top. You're the winner.
Oh, egotist.
We made it. Yeah. Woo.
He's happy. We take off our boots, which are soggy with sweat, and set them to dry on a rock. I stare at my boots, then at Bozeman, far, far away, and at Chris.
What was that?
It's just a rock slide. Those things happen all the time up here.
Whoa! There's somebody up here.
Let's put our boots on. You know what I think? Let's leave camping on the mountain top for another day. Maybe next summer.
Why?
I just have bad feelings about it.
Like what?
Tell you the truth, I'm a little frightened. You're a long way from help if anything happened to me. Tie your boots. Don't sit staring at me. Tie your boots.
Okay.
I don't suppose that sounds much like the old days to Chris either. Phaedrus never spooked at anything. Never. And that's the difference between us. That's why I'm alive and he's not. That's why I'm alive and you're not. If you are up here, some ghost, some psychic entity, waiting for me, waiting for Chris, well, you will wait a long time. We're going back down, far, far down, to the ocean.
Tell Chris I'll meet him at the ocean.
Chris, where are you?
I'm down here in the trees. I'm waiting for you.
Well, there's something else I want to say to you, Phaedrus. I want you to hear this. I want you to remember something. You remember a crisp morning when you went to your bookshelf and picked up a book called Tao Te Ching. 2,500 years old, and as you read it, you began to substitute the word quality for the word Tao. And there it all was. Quality is the origin of heaven and earth. When named, quality is the mother of all things. Exactly what you've been trying to say all along. Yes. Yes, are you hearing me? And so, do you remember what happened next, Phaedrus? Huh? Do you remember that feeling inside as your mind began to part like rocks slipping at the top of the mountain? It grew and grew into an avalanche of thought and awareness out of control. It all gave way underneath you. Do you remember this?
Who are you talking to?
Nobody.
Nobody talks to nobody.
Well, no. Just somebody I used to know.
So what was so funny about him?
Well, this, I guess. He sacrificed his life. Everything he had that was of any value to him for an idea.
Must have been a big idea, huh?
No, that's what's so funny. He had a new idea he called quality that he thought was the same as an old idea called the Buddha. That was it.
So what?
It was then and is now of no interest to anybody on earth and of even less practical value. And I guess that's what makes me.
But he thought it was worth it. I'd like to meet him. I really want to meet him.
Thank you.
dark and late when we get back to Bozeman. So we check in at the main downtown motel. Tourists stare at me. With my old army clothes, two-day beard, and black beret, I must look like some old-style Cuban revolutionary in for a raid. We collapse into our beds without a word. Next morning, we say goodbye to Bob and Jenny DeWeese and head north on the open road. We've come a long way again today, so far from home. I wonder if Chris is feeling it too. He's been awful quiet since we left Montana. A sort of sadness has descended. Another day is nearly gone forever, and there's nothing ahead but gathering darkness, and a growing realization ever since this trip began, but especially since the mountaintop, that these ideas about Zen and the art of motorcycle maintenance seem less and less like parts of Phaedrus's memory, and more like a part of mine. I don't know what this means. Except that the real motorcycle you're working on all the time is a cycle called yourself. The machine that appears to be out there and the person that appears to be in here are not two separate things.
Dad.
What?
I have diarrhea. Oh.
We're at the intersection with Highway 97 where we'll head south. While Chris cleans himself up in the bathroom, I fill the tank and then sit on a yellow-painted cement curb with my feet in the gravel.
All cleaned up?
My stomach hurts.
You're just tired, Chris. We need some sleep.
Sylvia called it the funeral procession. Nobody looks at anybody. Nobody cares about anybody. And I hate it.
Me too. We've been out of it for so long, I'd forgotten all about it.
Out of what?
Civilization. The funeral procession. The hyped up, oh-so-modern, egotistical bullshit people who not only think they own America, they think they are America. We've arrived at the West Coast.
Why don't you come out of the shadows? What is it you're afraid of? Beyond the figure in the shadows is the glass door. Behind the glass door is Chris. He's older now.
Dad, what do I do now? I need you to tell me, what do I do next?
I'm gonna kill you! I'm gonna kill you!
Dad, you've gotta wake up!
Dad!
Wake up!
It's all right, Chris. Hey, it's all right. All right, I'm awake. Hey, it was just a nightmare.
I can just barely make out his face in the dawn light.
Okay.
We're in among trees somewhere. There's a motorcycle here. I think we're in Oregon somewhere.
I was trying to see somebody's face.
You said you were going to kill me.
No, not you, Chris. Person in the dream.
Who was it? Did you see the face?
Yeah, it was my own face, Chris. Hey, you're shivering. Get back in your sleeping bag. I'm sorry I frightened you.
It's so cold here, Dad.
Hey, try and get back to sleep.
It's so cold.
The dream again. But now I see the dreamer isn't me. The dream isn't mine. Phaedrus has woken up.
Hey, Chris. Chris, you okay now?
Yeah. Yeah.
You remember Chicago?
I was little.
Yeah, you were six. You remember a car ride?
When we were supposed to be getting bunk beds, you mean?
Is that what we were doing?
Yeah, don't you remember?
Tell me what you remember.
It was cold, like now. The heaters didn't work. I had two coats on. I just remember everything being gray. We were going in circles. Dad, where are we?
I don't know. Why? Where are we going?
We're supposed to be going to the bunk bedders. Mom sent us to get new beds, remember?
Yeah? When was that?
A while ago.
Where are the bunk bedders?
I don't know, Dad. I'm only six. You're supposed to know the way to places. Maybe we'll see him if we just keep going.
I don't think so.
Dad, you can't just stop the car in the middle of the road.
That was the first time I knew for sure that there was something wrong. That's all I remember. We got home somehow. I think maybe the police took us home.
I won't let anything like that happen again, Chris. I promise. I'll head down to San Francisco and put Chris on a bus for home. Sell the motorcycle, check into a hospital. No, that would be pointless. I don't know what I'll do. Phaedra's arrived at the University of Chicago already in a world of thought so different from mine or yours that I doubt we could really understand it. He decided to write a doctoral thesis on the meaning of quality, but in which discipline? It would take quite a program to accept a PhD in which the candidate refused to define a central term. And then he found Chicago's interdisciplinary program in analysis of ideas and study of methods.
Professor?
Yes?
I was told you wanted to see me about my application for a scholarship.
Ah. You are the gentleman who's going to tell us all about quality.
Well, yeah, I'd like to try.
Yes, I'm sure you would. There's something I'm not clear about. What is to be your substantive field?
English composition.
English composition is a methodological field, not a substantive one. I'm afraid I cannot recommend a scholarship. In fact, I cannot for the dear life of me understand how this university has admitted a candidate who is ignorant of the difference between method and substance. If you'll excuse me.
I do not accept the division of method and substance. I think this is maybe where you've all been going wrong.
I beg your pardon?
It is just an outgrowth of Aristotle's ideas about form and substance. What I intend to show is that the concept of quality does away with this dichotomy.
Oh, I see. You've managed to prove Aristotle wrong.
Well, I'm working on it. And where better to present this thesis than a great university like this?
Perhaps because it contradicts everything we believe in?
But a university that can't accept a thesis that contradicts its fundamental beliefs is in a rut, don't you think?
A rut?
Look at it this way. You want some other university to come up with a historic breakthrough between Eastern and Western philosophy? You want to be behind the game here? Besides, this is Chicago. This is where guys get rubbed out. It's time Aristotle got his.
Megalomania. Delusions of grandeur. Although they couldn't stop him writing his thesis, Phaedrus was already done for. He had declared war on the ancient Greeks because they had invented reason, the analytical tool with which to understand and classify life, and set it up over quality, the instinctive response to life that creates beauty and goodness and allows you to experience them.
We don't count, do we?
No, she'll take our order in a while.
I don't mean the waitress. It's everywhere you look. Nobody counts.
When Chris talks this way, I have to accept who his real father was. And this is why I always disappoint him, because I'm not him. And he can't understand why I'm not him.
Okay, quick as you can, what can I get you?
In circus trapeze terms, everybody in life is either a catcher or a flyer. In Greek philosophy terms, everybody is either a Platonist or an Aristotelian. Plato is the flyer, the essential Buddha seeker, soaring ever upward towards the one. And Aristotle is the catcher, the eternal motorcycle mechanic, endlessly sorting the things of life into piles and putting labels on them.
It was ironic that Phaedrus, the teacher of rhetoric, naturally sided with Plato because his intense reading of the Greeks soon revealed Plato's hatred of all rhetoricians, especially those known as the Sophists. The Sophists were teachers of wisdom, but they didn't teach fixed principles. Truth, for instance, they taught about the improvement of man, the good, already excellence, the duty of man to himself, to be the best he can be. So 1,000 years before Aristotle's Mind and Matter, there'd been a thing called excellence, which sounded awfully like quality. He read it again. Already. Excellence. Duty of man towards himself. And saw this was an almost exact translation of the Sanskrit word dharma, sometimes described as bhumun. He stood for a moment, totally still. Then lightning hit all around him. Quality, excellence, dharma. That's what the Sophists had been teaching before the Church of Reason, before substance, before form, before mind and matter, 1,000 years before dialectic itself. Quality had been absolute. Rain hits us like pellets. The 20th century. It's all around us now, the mediocre, built-in, towering edifices over the dust of the good. Time to finish this 20th century odyssey of Phaedrus the madman and have done with it. The next time the class in ideas and methods met, they'd been assigned another Platonic dialogue which went by the name of Phaedrus, the young man Socrates is talking with. Our Phaedrus had read the dialogue so thoroughly, he practically knew it by heart. He was ready.
Well then, today we are to discuss the Phaedrus dialogue. Who would like to begin? Mr. Quality, how would you characterize Phaedrus here?
He prefers solitude. He is an outsider. He is aggressive.
He is indeed aggressive. Does he not threaten his master Socrates with violence at one point? I trust we'll be having none of that. Phaedrus means what?
Wolf.
Wolf?
Mm-hmm.
Indeed it is so. And with your long beard and your rather piercing eyes, Mr. Quality, there is something of the wolf about you. I will ask you to take us through the dialogue, if you'll please, Mr. Phaedrus.
Plato is using his dialogue to allow Socrates to describe to us the soul, the one, what I have been referring to as quality, the source of all things, including reason, and therefore not something that can be understood or defined or reached by reason.
Then it doesn't exist. This is tiresome. But well done, Socrates and Plato, for somehow managing to agree with you 3,000 years before you were born.
No, I am simply pointing out that the one in India and the one in Greece must be the same entity, otherwise there'd be two. But though it cannot be defined, it can be described, approached, as it were. And in this dialogue, Plato lets Socrates approach the idea of quality by using the notion of two horses pulling a chariot. In the chariot is the seeker. His goal is the soul, the one, quality. The two horses are the white horse of reason and the black horse of passion. The dialogue suggests that reason will be the truer guide to finding the oneness of existence. But of course, all of this is just his opinion.
Stop! Plato is not suggesting anything. And this is not simply Socrates' opinion. Socrates has sworn to the gods that this is the truth, that reason, rational thought, is the only way to understand existence. If what he says is not the truth, then he has forfeited his own soul.
Well, no.
Socrates does not say it is the literal truth?
Oh, well, yes.
Thank you.
But 2 pages earlier, he also tells us that it's all just an analogy, a way of describing the journey towards the oneness of existence. The white horse of reason is just an analogy, a figure of speech. Therefore, we are not being told that reason stands above everything. So why, I wonder, do you teach that when it isn't true?
My goodness, I thought all the Sophists were long dead.
Well, so did I, but there you sit, using the power of your words and of your authority in the Church of Reason to defend a palpably untrue position, that reason is everything, and it's a lie. But of course, it is a lie that keeps the world in the hands of guys like you.
Guys like me?
Yeah, yeah. Intellectual bullies. Guys who can only function in a system based on weakness. What you really want from us here today isn't ability. It's inability. A truly able student is a threat to you. The perfect student in this institution is the one who is willing to accept the bowing and scraping and the intellectual prostration you need from us to maintain your power. Sheep is what you want. But mark what I'm saying here. Sometimes the shepherd goes above the timberline, and he calls for his sheep to come. But he doesn't find himself looking into the eyes of his sheep. He finds the eyes of a wolf staring right back at him. So by all means, call me Phaedrus, if you'd like to.
Phaedrus looks at the professor, struggling to make a brave face of it, but lost for words. When the bell rings to end the class, he walks out and leaves the university forever. Thanksgiving comes and goes, and he wonders what will happen next. His sleep dwindles to 2 hours a night. He starts walking the streets endlessly, his mind spinning. It's nearly over for him. The city closes in on him, the antithesis of what he believes in. The citadel, not of quality, but of form and substance. Steel sheets and girders, concrete piers and roads, brick, asphalt, auto parts, old radios and rails, dead carcasses of animals that once grazed the prairies. That is the soul of the city, blind, huge, sinister, and inhuman, seen by the light of fires flaring upward in the night from blast furnaces in the south through heavy coal smoke, deeper and denser into the neon signs of beer and pizza and laundromat, unknown and meaningless signs along meaningless straight streets going off into other straight, meaningless streets forever and forever. He stares at the buildings, knowing they're buried inside a grotesque, twisted souls forever trying on the manners that will convince them their lives have quality. Learning strange poses of style and glamour sold to them by magazines and television, and he cries out into the night.
God, there is nothing here but dead neon and cement and brick.
And his mind keeps returning to the dialogue between the philosopher and the wolf.
And what is good, Phaedrus? And what is not good? Need we really ask anyone to tell us these things?
His thoughts start to slow down. And his movements. It's around this time he drives Chris to buy bunk beds. After that, he does not leave the apartment. He stares at the wall. There is no way back, no way forward. He tells his wife to leave and take the children. Fear and shame disappear when his urine flows across the floor, when cigarettes burn down into his fingers. His wife calls for help. His mind comes apart, dissolves, and fades away.
You gotta cross that lonesome valley. You gotta cross it by yourself.
What?
What?
You were singing something.
Was I?
Where are we? It's dark.
I don't know where we are anymore. I can't seem to think what to do next. I see a motel down the street.
When are we going back home? Dad? I'm just so tired of sitting in places like this. We're not really going anywhere, are we, Dad? Dad?
Where should we be going?
I don't know. How should I know?
I don't know either.
Well, why don't you know?
Chris, I'm sorry.
When I was little, it was different. We always did things I wanted to do. Now I don't want to do anything.
I don't know what to do, Chris.
It used to be fun. Like the time we went to buy the beds.
That was fun.
You used to play games with us. Tell us all kinds of stories about wolves and sheep. And the Buddha. And going to India and all the stuff you did. No, you don't do anything. You just sit and stare.
He's crying for him. It's Phaedrus he misses. He wants his dad back. Not this empty shell we turned him into. We're on the Mendocino County coast now. Wild and beautiful. Before the road drops down from the high cliffs to the beach, I stop the motorcycle and turn the engine off. And walk to the edge of the cliff.
What are we stopping here for?
I'm tired.
My stomach hurts. I hate this trip. I hate everything. I'm sorry I came.
I have been thinking about putting you on a bus for home.
What?
I'll drive on for a week or two.
Well, why do you want me to go home?
Chris, I think you can see for yourself what the problem is. You don't want to be here. You don't want to be with me. I think it's time we should talk. You had a father who was insane for a long time and is now close to it again. It's not just close to it. It's here. The bottom of the ocean. I am sending you home, not because I am angry with you, but because I am afraid of what might happen to you if you stay with me. So.
But they're saying it about me. I know they are. It's all in my head.
Chris, be careful. Not too near the edge.
Don't they say it's all in my head?
Hey, Chris, just come back a little. You're too.
Don't they? It feels real inside me. But it isn't. It's just my head.
It is not your fault. Chris, please understand that. It's never been your fault. Please step away from the edge.
No!
Chris.
No!
Hey, Chris.
Don't come near
please.
Me.
Please. Chris, yeah.
Don't come
you
near
have
me.
To. Hey. Everything is all right now, Chris. Hey, I haven't forgotten you. Not my voice. We'll be together now. I am Phaedrus.
Why did you leave us?
When?
At the hospital.
There was no choice. The police put me there.
You mean they wouldn't let you out?
No.
Well then, why wouldn't you open the door?
What door?
The glass door.
I couldn't open that door, Chris. They told me not to. I had to do everything they said.
I thought you didn't want to see me.
The look of fear in his eyes all these years. Now I see that door. It is in a hospital. I am Phaedrus. That is who I am. And they are going to destroy me for speaking the truth. It has all come together.
Hey, don't cry anymore, Chris. Hey, come here. Shh. Come here.
Dad?
Yeah?
Were you really insane?
No! No, of course not!
I knew it! I knew it!
A motorcycle when I get old enough.
If you take care of it.
Will you show me how to?
Sure.
Is it hard? Maintaining a motorcycle is easy if you have the right attitude to life. It's having the right attitude to life is hard.
Will I have the right attitude, you think?
I don't think that'll be any problem at all, Chris.
And so we ride on and on. Down through Ukiah and Hopland and Cloverdale, down into the wine country. The engine, which has carried us halfway across America, sings on and on, oblivious to everything but its own beautiful internal forces. Asti and Santa Rosa, Petaluma and Novato. The freeway grows wider and fuller, swelling with cars and trucks and buses full of people. And soon by the road are houses and boats and the water of the bay. Trials never end, of course. Unhappiness and misfortune will occur as long as people live. But there is a feeling now that was not here before. And it's not just on the surface of things. It penetrates all the way through. We've won it. It's gonna get better now.
Chris, it's gonna get better now.
How do you know?
I just know. You can sort of tell these things.
In Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, Dad was played by James Purefoy, Chris by Max Kasier, John by Sean Power, and Sylvia by Lucy Newman-Williams. Glennie was played by Caitlin Thorburn, the Professor by Paris Arrowsmith, and the students were from the Arts Educational School in London. The music was composed by John Nichols. Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance by Robert M. Persig was dramatised for radio by Peter Flannery. It was directed by Melanie Harris and is a Spark Lab production for BBC Radio 4.